Support for Popcast comes from CNN, presenting a new original series from executive producer Dwayne Johnson, premiering April 20th, about the moments that changed the world and the songs that became the soundtracks of our times. From the civil rights movement to the aftermath of 9/11, these are the seismic events that have shaped our lives. Hear the music of resistance, the music of hope, the music of unity, and the songs etched in our memories forever. Soundtracks, Songs That Defined History, premieres Thursday, April 20th at 10 Eastern and Pacific on CNN.
Popcast is supported in part by HelloFresh, the meal kit delivery service dedicated to making cooking fun, easy, and convenient, and delivered right to your door. For $30 off your first week of deliveries, visit HelloFresh.com and enter promo code NYTPOP when you subscribe.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your embittered young folk singer forced to turn to EDM for work of music news and criticism. I'm your host, John Garamonica.
We were staying in Paris to get away from your parents, and I thought, wow, if I could take this in a shot right now, I don't think that we could work this out on a terrace. I don't know if it's fair, but I thought, how could I let you fall by yourself? Well, I'm wasted with someone else. If we go down, then we go down together. They'll say you could do anything. They'll say that I was clever. If we go down, then we go down together.
Do you guys travel much? Because I've just been to Paris. With the Chainsmokers.
Boo.
That's right. That's right. Get your virtual tourism on with this hot EDM duo. Anyway, the Chainsmokers, which is has become something of a frequent topic on Popcast, despite my best efforts to make it not a frequent topic. The Chainsmokers are back. Hey guys, I have a great panel today to talk about how the Chainsmokers are back. Is everybody pumped? Is everybody low pumped?
We're so pumped.
Okay, fine. Anyway, I am joined by the Legends League of Chainsmoker Scholars for this podcast. To my right, Julianne Shepherd, culture editor, Jezebel.com.party.net.
Don't forget the party.net.
Yes.
Don't forget the Escobedo.
And at
Johnita. Okay. Julianne's here across the table. Larry Fitzmaurice, chill wave pioneer and senior culture editor at Vice.
How's it going?
It's lit. If you were unaware, it's most assuredly lit.
It's a small conflagration in the middle of the table.
That is true.
Is that lit?
Yes, I think it's called a dumpster fire. And rounding out the quartet today, New York Times pop music editor and Chainsmokers denialist, Karen Gans.
I didn't know that was what I am.
But you are now. For the next 30 minutes, you are.
I accept.
Yes. Yeah. I didn't think you would turn that down. Yeah. Okay. So the Chainsmokers finally put out a full-length album, which I don't think is inherently meaningful. However, it is something that we are all, in our own way, have been forced to engage with critically. So, what a great time to engage with the Chainsmokers. The album is called Memories, Ellipsis, Do Not Open, which I thought I didn't totally understand. Is it do not open the memories, or is it I'm having memories and I don't want to open something else? Totally understand the album title, but there are a lot of things about the Chainsmokers that I don't understand. So I think that's probably okay.
I think it's a classic emo double entendre.
Did you say entendre?
I think that was a Freudian, but entendre.
Yes. Wow. Okay. So you think it's a very deliberate thing?
Yeah. I mean, they're saying memories, do not open my memories, but then it's a memory. It's a reminder to themselves not to delve into their
own Pandora's box.
It's too painful.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. There's a sort of smart thing. Anyway, I'm interested to know the answer to this. Karen, I'm going to exempt you from this question. Larry, scale of 1 to 10, what do you give this record? Just curious. Just super curious.
I mean, it's hard, but I would probably give it like a 3 or a 4
okay.
out of 10, like a solid 3 or 4.
You're getting held back in English.
Well, I mean, like, it's like this, like, I don't know, like, when you listen to music for a living, I think you hear a lot of stuff that is literally unlistenable.
Yes.
But there is this kind of basic element that the chain smokers have that makes it, like, listenable by design. Like, there's, like, yes. a reason why people—
It's algorithmic.
Yeah, exactly, right. Yeah. Like, your brain is kind of, like, trained, unfortunately, to, like, you know, have this music stuck in your head, which is, like, yeah. again, unfortunate.
Yeah, they're playing.
If you see it that way.
Shep, what do you think?
I think in keeping with the algorithm and to sort of up the ante, I would go with a 3.14 repeating.
Wow.
Whoa.
A pie in the face.
A pie in my eye. I agree. I think that, you know, in the spectrum of music that I've heard in my life, it is not the most awful thing. Mm-hmm. I think that if I don't listen to the lyrics, it is sufficient background music. I was thinking about how, remember when Moby made that album for W Hotels?
No.
It was like a mixtape. It was a whole thing when they were really pushing W Hotels and like the— You have to fact
Does anybody
check me,
else
but
have
like,
this record? Like,
I think I remember this. Like I think the listening album, session right? was they invited me to get a free massage, and they played the album while I was getting massaged.
That's creepy.
I'll point out, I didn't work here when I accepted that
right.
perk. That was pre-New York Times.
Right. It was like somewhere.
No one
like
tried to offer us free massages.
Yeah. I would not accept it now.
T Grizzly's publicist, if you're listening, no free massages. Not at all. Okay. All right.
But yeah, it's like that. It's very like hotel lobby if you don't listen to the lyrics. It didn't offend me like some of their other music did, although some of the synth sounds I think are actually very absurd in a displeasing way. But yeah, you know, it's 3.14. Factor in the lyrics, though, it probably goes way down.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Although I feel like my hot take after listening to the record a few times was like, maybe it's a 5 even. Like, I'm
I
you know
that.
Yeah, I caught myself feeling like maybe 3 or 4 of the songs were like possibly very good. And I've greatly disliked the Chainsmokers, and I greatly dislike most of their big hits, the biggest hits. Like, I don't like the Halsey record. I do love the Daya record.
Yeah.
Don't Let Me Down.
Love
which
that.
I think is a
I actually like that.
Super banger.
Great song.
And I think probably like the best example of the Chainsmokers making like a true— I mean, I don't even— EDM's not real. Let's just preface this. EDM's not real, kids. It's not a real thing.
Wow.
Right. Sorry.
EDM truther.
Yeah, it's not real. Right. That said, it's like a good, solid, like true down the middle EDM record. Everything that sort of follows is like nah, hard no. It's in my head, darling, I hope that you'll be here when I need you the most.
So I have this theory that EDM was always positioned to be and is now becoming the new adult contemporary.
See,
and this
it's
is
almost like you read my review. Damn.
I actually didn't. It just went up.
I'm just playing.
But this is the banner record and the bridge between adult contemporary and EDM. And, you know, the fact that it is designed specifically to appeal to so many genres in a calculated way, in a way that does not seem organic. I don't really think that the Chainsmokers were like, yo, let's get our friends for Florida Georgia Line on a track.
Flaggle.
Yeah.
Shout out to my bros, my flaggle bros.
It seems like a label networking connection.
And I say, I have in the past sometimes liked Florida Georgia Line, sometimes disliked them. This is abhorrent. This Florida Georgia Line song on this record is genuinely abhorrent. It's unbearable. So, Julian, I agree with what you're saying. I think let's maybe rewind a little bit and talk about how we got to this moment. Because when I was thinking hard about how we arrived at the Chainsmokers making the kind of music you're talking about, I was thinking about why did the Chainsmokers start making music in the first place? And what did they get popular with? And what I realized is they got popular basically making, either depending on your angle, making fun dance music or making fun of dance music, depending on how you chose to look at it. And so when you see what they've made in 2017, which are these sort of light pop songs, and if this is what the long con was always, I mean, I don't know if it always was, then you start to look at that other stuff even more skeptically than I know that many of us looked at it at the time. So anybody want to talk about Selfie?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Speak on it. Of course I want to talk about Selfie.
Speak on it, Larry.
I was just saying to you before, actually, kind of about the Electric Daisy Carnival in Vegas, and Selfie is the kind of song where when I went a few years ago is the kind of thing that which you would hear all the time in the middle of like just scores of like anonymous DJs sets. It's kind of this like it's like a little arch, but it's not like funny arch or like interesting arch. I think people like, you know, for anybody who hasn't heard the song, it's like very much like mocking the trend of like taking selfies in general and very specifically like the notion of like supposed female vaingloriousness. And, you know, I think there's something really like weird and awful about that in the song, but it doesn't really matter to the audience. And I think this extends to some of the, you know, weird, awful stuff in Chainsmokers' current work too, where it's not necessarily like looking at a mirror, but I think like it's like, oh yeah, I get it. Like we're in on the joke. Like I think like that's what their listeners feel like there. And, you know, whether or not they actually are is like another story. But like,
and also I feel like sometimes it's debatable whether it's a like it can be puerile but not be a joke, you know?
Yeah, it's
and
hard
I feel
to
like
tell.
I can't tell sometimes.
For two guys who are like so simple and like plain, like they're really hard to nail down.
That came with like an implicit wow. Bless their hearts.
Wow. I mean, that was a read.
Yeah, it really was. It's a true story.
Look at me while he's with that other girl. Do you think he was just doing that to make me jealous? Because he was totally texting me all night last night, and I don't know if it's a booty call or not. So, like, what do you think? Did you think that girl was pretty? How did that girl even get in here? Do you see her? She's so short, and that dress is so tacky. Who wears Cheetah? It's not even summer. Why does the DJ keep on playing Summertime Sadness? After dinner in the bathroom, can we go smoke a cigarette? I really need one. But first, let me take a selfie.
Quick break from the Popcast Jams. Back in a moment. So, okay, so Chainsmokers 1.0 is making these kind of like, when I was re-listening to them recently, I'm like, oh, these are like weirdly parody records. Mm-hmm. Like they're dance music hits, but they're also parodies of dance music hits kind of all woven together. And then slowly throughout, that's in 2014. And then throughout 2015 and 2016, what starts to happen is they kind of start like filleting dance music. You know, they start like, saying, well, we'll just take this thing out. We'll just like trim this part off and we'll just try to like get down to like bass component parts. And then they slow the tempos down a little bit. And then all of a sudden, you have basically a bad pop song with like a fake drop. And that's what EDM, quote unquote, ends up becoming, or adult contemporary, Julianne, as you were saying. And that was, to me, the most striking thing about this album is it's sort of like, this is like the final character in the game. It's like, yeah, we went through all these levels and all these like pretend approaches to making dance music, but haha, that's not what we were really doing at all.
I don't think you can even give them credit though for creating this sound. I mean, I don't though, because it's, you know, I mean, I think of the Clean Bandit single Rather Be from a few years ago, which was seen as kind of, and rightly so, as kind of like an attempt to capitalize on the very brief but I think impactful breakthrough that Disclosure had when they released their first album. And looking back at Rather Be, like that seems to me like super. Almost this kind of weird midpoint where like, you know, like anything combined with James Blake as well, I think those are like two things that like that are never far in these guys' minds, whether like implicitly or not.
It's interesting, though, because, you know, all those acts are British. And I think that the way that that works in the UK, I mean, obviously, it's clear that these acts are trying to, were trying to break into the US. And it kind of, from what I know, is always a goal for UK artists to break in the US just because we have such a huge market and lots of money and fans. But do you think that they were thinking of those artists? I can't imagine the Chainsmokers sitting down and actually listening to a Disclosure song. I mean, that's how far away I feel like their sensibilities and musical affinities are. And I'm not particularly a huge fan of Disclosure either.
Sure, yeah.
I think the Sam Smith song with Disclosure was so big that they heard it on the radio. Like, I don't think they're studying music, but I think they probably are listening to the radio.
But this, I'm going to bring it back to Larry again, because Larry, okay, so Larry had the Fire Chainsmokers take. The Chainsmokers have been around so long without an album that kind of all takes have been exhausted at this point. Like, there's the only real take that hasn't been written is like the Chainsmokers are pure genius. Like, that take doesn't exist because it's just not viable.
But every
other take has been taken. But then Larry came with the Fuego take. And Larry, you want to talk us through your piece on noisy.vice.com?
Yeah, sure. To kind of jump off to what you guys were saying, like, after the Billboard profile came out, which I think everybody here has read at least once, if not multiple times. I did a deep dive.
Yeah, you K-filed them.
Yeah.
Well, you really did.
I wanted to dig through their Twitter and just see like what they said like 3 years ago. And there's a lot from Drew Taggart, the, you know, what some people have taken to call the pretty chain smoker. That's not my phrase. I've seen other people use it. But
you destroyed the room with that one.
We are not judgmental about looks on the podcast.
No, no, not at all.
We're not. Everyone, they are both the pretty chain smoker as far as
this
I'm
is
concerned.
True.
They both are.
I'm petty though. I loved it.
But there were like all these tweets from him being like, oh, like I love James Blake. Like this is like a just James Blake song is my jam. Like he screenshotted like a notes app page where like he was like, this is how I make notes when I don't have my recording equipment. And the first note was "Hi, James Blake sound." And I don't even know what that means, but except for the fact that he really likes James Blake.
Like that sound?
I guess, yeah.
Like the moaning cow at like 120 beats p.m.?
Yeah, like, I don't know. My piece like kind of talks about how a lot of people do not like them, including everybody in this room, and kind of like thinking about why they don't like them, but or why they're bad, really. And I think one of the reasons why they seem really bad to me is because they really embrace nostalgia as this, like, literal commodity. And that's not really new to, like, what, you know, what marketing firms call EDM. It's it's something that's always
happened.
You're
an EDM truther, too.
I mean, it's not something that really exists. Yeah. But that's always been like kind of like, you know, like the lingua franca of the genre where it's like, oh, like, you know, live for today. There's no tomorrow. Like, you know, this moment is huge. I mean, it almost reminds me of the movie We Are Your Friends.
Love that movie.
Yeah.
So good.
It's a good one. And where it's like he spends all this time making the main character played by Zac Efron is this like aspiring EDM DJ slash producer who like spends all this time making like tracks that sound like other tracks. And he like finds his voice at the end by sampling all this stuff that people have said to him over the years in his life. And it's like literally he just like mines like his past and his background to create something.
Spoiler alert, Larry.
He's the range.
I mean, yes.
Exactly. Zac Efron is the range. Yes. That's fire. I didn't realize that. What a great conceit.
The music is very good, and all of the music that Zac Efron supposedly makes, little fun fact, is made by Siegel, who is the guy who did all the music for Skins.
Oh, damn.
And he's a really good British producer slash producer, but he did all the music for
British producer slash producer.
Internet personality. I don't know.
Everybody go watch We Are Your Friends this weekend. Is it on Netflix?
It should be.
It better be.
Is, yeah.
Check Can I Stream It and find it on the interwebs. Do you feel, though, that the nostalgia is a sonic effect or a lyrical conceit or both?
I feel like it's purely lyrical, except for the Florida Georgia Line song and Paris, both of which sound really, really indebted to the, like, the point of plagiarism of M83, an artist who has built his entire career on, you know, like, exploring his past through both, like, sounds and, like, iconography.
I will agree, but this is where I enter, why I wanted to be on this podcast,
to
just reiterate a tweet that did not get enough love that I wrote. That's why I'm here.
Gobcast is a home. If any of you out there think that your tweets are not getting the attention they deserve, come to Popcast.
Clearly, an underappreciated tweet where I compared Paris to the Postal Service, because it sounds exactly like a Postal Service song. The tone of her voice, I mean, everything about it, it's almost identical. And it was bothering me because I was like, it's so easy to repackage the nostalgia from 10, 15 years ago for this generation. It was making me nuts.
And also, I mean, I feel like that Postal Service sound brought is, you see it elsewhere. I mean, you hear it not just in something like Chainsmokers, but I think what you were talking a little bit about, Larry, about the Clean Bandit thing, and, you know, those Jess Glynn records and whatever, like, that all feels... It's, you know, it's two clicks to the left.
Yeah.
Where are you, Jimmy Tamborello?
Hopefully. I mean, he's not caking, I don't think. He probably should be caking.
Yeah.
But it does feel like this is, like, the maybe one of the purest examples of, like, the mainstream catching on to an idea 5 to 10 years out. Because I don't think these guys, maybe the Chainsmokers do, but I don't think the average kids now are, like, listening to the Postal Service. But it is that sound sort of, like, finally having kind of, like, barfed its way into the mainstream.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know how Smashing Pumpkins' Melancholy and Infinite Sadness influenced, like, that whole generation of emo kids? I feel like Postal Service is that album for this sort of EDM emo.
Interesting.
I totally agree with you.
Thanks. Fire. Yeah. Fire.
Talking about nostalgia, I actually think it's not just lyrical. I think it's a sort of musical idea.
It is. I agree with that.
You know, I really love corporate raves. I have such a good time. I love all raves, but I...
Julianne, when you're like, do you want to go cover Electric Daisy Carnival? She's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
When, where, like, how can I get there?
Yeah. I know. I mean, literally, I will go to any, like, mainstream corporate rave.
Do you have a t-shirt that says corporate rave still rock?
I probably should. But, like, you know, you're in the middle of, and part of it is because you do sort of get this, like, prepackaged feeling of nostalgia that, like, you know, when you're outside and it's summer and there are, like, tons of fireworks going off and everyone around you is young and they're having the time of their lives. It's like, it actually is, it's, again, with the algorithm, it's almost like, okay, we know this is where our main target audience is. It's not the radio, terrestrial or otherwise. It's in these festivals. And so what these kids want to hear is Don't Let Me Down.
Yeah, actually, I think it was Drew Taggart who said when they were releasing this record on Twitter, he was like, oh, fans, like, don't worry. Like, we're still going to be playing, like, the fun stuff live. But, like, you know, we're going to work in some of this stuff, too. It's, like, such a weird thing to say to people who are, like, you want to listen to your record. It's, like, we have this thing coming out, but, like, don't worry.
Yeah.
We're not going to be playing too much of it.
We know it's. We know you're going to think it sucks.
Yeah. Can I ask, like, an abstract question? Why?
That's it.
Yes, just why.
That's it.
Why did the Chainsmokers make an album?
Totally agree. Totally.
Like, this was the one thing that you didn't have enough room in your review to address.
I needed to be writing for the New York Review of Books to address that question.
But I mean, it's kind of a joke at this point that they hadn't made an album and they've been out for years. They have so much success on the radio and on the charts with the singles. You don't need an album anymore. Is it vanity? Did the label push them to do it? Why?
I've got to assume that it's contractual, at least in part.
Yeah.
I have to assume that's at least part of it. But I also think they wanted to do, and this is where we can kind of circle back to the adult contemporary thing or the kind of long con of EDM. So one of the things that I wrote about in my piece is that I believe that the the long con of EDM was not to get everyone into a nightclub or into a festival, but rather to export a couple of ideas from that sonic palette into the pop mainstream. Mm-hmm. That was the actual long con. And so this album is in many ways the kind of like, you know, it's the end character in the video game. It's like we went through all the other steps. We fought all the other demons and bandits. And now, we're pop stars. Like, LOL, like we're just pop stars. And I think that's why they made an album. They made an album because the album is a sign of self-seriousness that goes with people who have been playing a prank on you for the last 3 years, but who really are like trying to like make pop, like make genuine pop star hits now. That'd be my guess.
Well, this leads me to a question about the SNL performance, because I have to admit that I had not seen them perform before, but I was shocked.
Wait, did you see the Halsey thing at the MTV?
Oh, I did.
VMAs?
When he touched her inappropriately, I believe. Okay, I forgot about that. I was actually at the VMAs.
Yes, I was strutting around.
I had a good seat at the VMAs.
Like, you could definitely get arrested in like 20 countries for what happened on that.
Oh, okay, I forgot about that. But at what point in their career did should we call him the handsome one, decide that he was going to be the front man?
I do not support this. I do not support this. What ist is it? It's some kind of ist-ism.
It's looks-ism.
Looks-ism. Yeah. I don't support this looks-ism about the Chainsmokers.
So the guy who happens to sing. when did he start presenting himself as a pop star? Because I think this is related to your, you know, like, by the way, we're pop stars.
I think within the last 12 months?
Yeah, basically.
I feel like the Halsey moment
was like
coming
out moment.
Yeah, that felt like a
bad one.
And I think, were you, Julianne, were you texting me and basically saying that like they don't want to have to pay singers anymore? Like sort of as, I don't know if it was a joke
idea.
Or not. But
I mean, yeah. So I think that there are a couple things with them. I mean, just so we don't gloss it over, I think that a lot of what they have done, whether or not they themselves are misogynist, is incredibly misogynist.
Yes.
Both lyrically, I mean, Selfie, I have so many problems with Selfie. Let me just catch my breath. and a lot of their lyrics on this album are just completely just vilifying women who they are supposedly in relationships in the song with.
Yeah, imagine dating a chain smoker or dating Taggart.
It's just signing yourself up for abusive lyrics. But so kind of hand in hand with that, I can't help but see how they have employed these very young, really talented women singers to, you know, sort of propel their career. And what's interesting about that, I think, is that those women are the reason that they got that popular, I think. Those songs, the songs that are their biggest are like With Roses and with Diet.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about those women. Mm-hmm. So in the past, it's been, there's Day on Don't Let Me Down. There's Halsey on Closer. Closer, also a closer. Always be selling. On this album, it's a couple different people. It's Emily Warren, it's Jhené Aiko, and it is it Luan or Luan?
I think so. I think it's Luan because
she's French.
She's French.
Yeah, she's French.
Otherwise, she's a Real Housewife of New York.
Yeah. So
we don't want that. Yeah.
Luan, she still might be.
Yeah. She might just give her 10 years. It could happen. And okay, so the thing that I was most struck by on this record lyrically is that the songs that were written with Emily Warren were, I thought, the only ones that approached anything approximating real feeling. And then, of course, I tried to do the thing where I was like, well, maybe fake feeling is the new real feeling. You know, like I tried to like retroactively justify the bad stuff. And I was like, no, it's just bad. So, Julianne, as you were saying, most of the songs on this record use women as tools, and not even like as sexual tools, but as tools of kind of like emotional waste bins.
Yeah.
And it's very disturbing. And whether it's I'm so famous, I can't possibly be loyal to you, or whether it's just I don't know. Maybe they're all that.
There's just a sheen of just hatred almost. It's just such a seething disdain. Whenever Drew Taggart sings about women, it's very uncomfortable for me, to be honest.
It's like Reddit wave.
And, I mean, that's what I was going to say. I think that part of what's crazy and, you know, part of why I feel that their popularity is relevant right now is because, not to get crazy, but like no, I feel like they're just, you know,
reflective
like
of an anti-woman. They're
like two steps from men's rights activists, you know, and I think that they're interesting because that sort of idea is very resonant in this moment. She wants to break up every night, then just back to life. How can I help it if I like the way she makes me feel it? Give me time, give me space, give me reason. That's what you tell me when you're leaving. Change your mind every night like the seasons. You're insatiable.
She wants to break up every night. Somebody asked me yesterday, do I think that like the chain smokers like are popular because they're like misogynists? And I was like, I think they're popular despite that. I think like a lot of their listeners are kind of just writing that off.
Oh, you think?
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know. I think it's like a climate of comfort with that kind of thinking.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, you know, I'd be interesting to hear you guys, especially since Larry and Julianne, you both go to festivals, these kinds of festivals more than I do. But I wonder if you can talk about kind of like the condition of being a woman at one of these festivals, because
the condition
it does feel like it would be. They're either like, depending on which blog you believe, like it's very nurturing and supportive, or it's like you're a constant source of, you know, it's like inserting yourself into like a emotionally and aesthetically violent place.
Yeah, I mean that's sort of the dissonance with it, right? Because it's all about peace, love, unity, and respect. You know, plur all day, but
plur boys.
Yeah, but you go to these festivals and they don't really book women to perform at them. Very rarely. Often there'll be like three, maybe four if you're lucky, women on an entire bill of like five stages over the course of 2 or 3 days. There's sort of a festy costume, which is different from the Coachella costume in that, you know, especially at Electric Daisy Carnival, it's very much like, you know, young, very young women wearing sort of like bras festooned with daisies and very skimpy shorts and, you know, and then dudes, bros just wearing like, you know, whatever, bro gear.
Tank tops.
Yeah. Like,
or not. Like, you know, or just
Suns out,
shirtless.
Guns out,
yeah,
you know.
Right. But is that another Chainsmoker song?
It should be.
I mean, so much of EDM culture in kind of triple air quotes is really aggressive towards women, from the lyrics down to the attitudes to just like being there, like being like in a crowd of people. Like there's aggression towards women constantly. And it's crazy because, you know, like if you want to like, you know, call it like it is and say this stuff is dance music, it's really straying really far from where with the ideals that like dance music was kind of founded on.
Yeah, dance music has safe space.
Yeah, yeah,
safe
right.
space for the excluded.
And inclusiveness, yeah. And like, you know, like, I don't know, it's kind of why it's like tough it hurts a little to call the Chainsmokers like dance music.
Right.
Because it's like they're like kind of the antithesis of like anything that like would typically draw you to dance music, just in terms of feeling and like humanity, I guess.
Okay, to circle back on this idea though, Julianne, you can do, this is where you can disclose, because I do want to talk a little bit about Emily Warren, because I want to talk about women in this scene. Mm-hmm. So Emily Warren has written for a bunch of other folks, in my mind, notably Cruella.
Mm-hmm.
So Julianne, Emily was one of your students.
So disclosure, a few years ago when I was teaching at the Clive Davis Institute of Recorded Music at NYU, Emily was one of my students. So that's my disclosure.
Just very important. We're all about open disclosure on the podcast.
Did you accept any massages?
Yeah, like,
you
was there any?
Right now?
Yeah, like to discuss Emily Warren.
I taught a class called Writing About Pop Music, so I knew that she had.
Which I had the good fortune to speak to those kids.
Yes, yes. You too. Both of you have come and spoken to my class, and you've spoken at Clive Davis. Yeah, but so she, I mean, you know, she was a good student and a good writer. I didn't really. I knew that she was, I had heard her music and I knew that she was signed to Dr. Luke's prescription songs. But, you know, since then, since she graduated, she's been very, very prolific and I think is incredibly talented. And, you know, again, like she has, to my mind, the only real tolerable songs on this album.
If her Wikipedia is to be believed, she's got a cut with Noah Cyrus. Wow.
I saw that. Is that out yet?
I mean, you know, I'm all about it. I haven't heard it, but I'm already all about it. Let's listen to one of the better Emily Warren songs on this record, which is, in my mind, I like My Type. Is everybody good with that? All right, let's listen to My Type.
You don't gotta say it, I know you ain't staying over. And I won't even mention the fact that you're never sober. I never know which side I'm gonna get tonight. And the closer we get, the less I think I know you. But you're just my type, the kind that only calls me late at night. You can't decide if you'll be yours or mine. I hate to say it, but you're just my type. Yeah, you're just my type. Yeah, yeah.
Now, My Type is, there still feels like something, I want to say a little rancid about the gender wars in this song, but it at least gives nuance to both sides of the argument, which is not a thing that like your typical Chainsmokers song does. And the fact, it actually makes me wonder, are the Chainsmokers actually without ideology? Like, because they can sort of just as easily support a rather smart song co-written with a woman as like extremely dumb songs written with whoever they write dumb songs with. So are the Chainsmokers really, are they just a blank post-it note?
Well, another one of the Emily Warren songs on the record, Don't Say, has these kind of lyrics where like, if you like kind of like strain hard enough while you're listening to it.
if you bend your ears.
Yeah. If you bend your ear enough, it kind of sounds like a woman telling the Chainsmokers that they need to stop being so awful. It's the kind of thing where it's like, I don't know, like where it's like you look at a magic eye painting and you're like, oh, like I see a boat and it's actually something else. Like, you know, it's really hard to know like whether or not like that's what it is. Like, it feels like wishful thinking to be like, oh yeah, I think these guys wrote this really self-aware song about
embedded
how they could be
critiques
terrible.
In yeah. their own song.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
part of the reason why we think this way is because we've read their press.
Yeah. Yeah. We didn't get the opportunity to speak with the Chainsmokers about this record.
And I have a hunch that we will not in the future.
I don't know why you would think that. I feel like there are a lot of questions that have yet to be asked of the Chainsmokers, and I think it's only fitting that they be asked.
For two guys who I think you should be able to pin down really easily, all bets seem to be constantly off with regards to what you can expect from their behavior.
Mm-hmm.
They recently have been sort of on this redemption tour, or trying to be on one, where they realize that many people read the Billboard cover and were really put off by their behavior and the things that they said. And
we should probably summarize for our listeners who might not have read the Billboard story what it was that we found objectionable in it.
They were just insipid. Like, they just seemed like insipid know-nothings. Okay, now we're not getting an interview.
Stricken from the record.
I mean, they said in the Billboard interview that they wrote songs because they wanted to date, but they used another word for date.
That doesn't always involve dates.
Right, it doesn't always involve dates. Models. And, you know, talked about just, like, loving beer and, like, just, you know, very, very, like...
And not craft beer.
Yeah.
Not, like, small-batch artisanal beer. Like, just beer. Like, beer that comes in 24-packs. That kind of beer.
Like, not even Tecate.
Yeah, no.
I'm just impressed that you did, like, New York Times style.
right,
in verbally retelling, that you would be knowing. They use a less, you know.
Smart.
I learned it from reading this guy.
But anyway, back to their bad interview. So you're saying now that you think that they have been on a, you know, apology tour.
They actually have. They've been trying
to say sorry.
Okay, yeah. They gave an interview to the NME where they were like, we were actually misunderstood and we were just kidding. And we're and we were just playing around.
Me too. I'm just kidding.
We're just out here for the music, man. And it was like, wow, you guys are about to release an album and you realize and your label realizes that people did not like how you came off in that Billboard. Mm.
Okay, so interesting question then. Can we actually see the musical decisions on this record? Can we actually see those musical decisions as a rejoinder to the Billboard interview? Because part of what they're doing is they're removing themselves from the kind of like geocultural context of that era, which is festival culture and bro heavy festival culture. So is part of the way that you become, that you get redemption, is you eschew that stuff altogether and say, actually, we just make rather tepid pop music now. So, like, you can never accuse us of being D-bags again.
I mean, they can't hold it back, which seems like they're that seems like their Achilles heel. Like, there's a song on the record called Young. Where they're like, you know, they're like, it's very like, it's peak nostalgia for them. And they're talking about like how, you know, it's hard growing up, but like we've been through all these things. But, and there's this like little laundry list in like the bridge of like, here's all the things I remember. And it's all things that the supposed like protagonist is like done to his ex-girlfriend. Like he's like, oh yeah, I crashed
your car. Your car,
and then I like shoved your dad in the lawn, but like, hey, it's hard when you're young. And it's like this just like can't help but come out, like, yeah, like no matter how hard they're trying to be like, you know, I think like nice guys, they like, yeah, obviously are not.
also that's a bad chorus. Let's listen to that chorus. Everybody prepare yourselves to listen to the bad chorus of Young by the Chainsmokers. The bar, don't worry my love, we're learning to love, but it's hard when you're young. I'm calling you up, you tell me it's over, say what you want, but it's hard when you're young. Okay, so that was Young, and that is one of, I believe, a handful of songs on the record that I feel probably have some, even though I dislike it, I feel like it has some potential as like maybe a successful pop song. And so when I was listening to this record and thinking about how I wanted to talk about it, I was thinking in the beginning about how everything was a punchline to them 3 years ago. And now, like, the joke feels very much on them. And I think the SNL thing really sort of puts that in stark relief. Karen, I know you really dislike that performance. I didn't dislike it quite as much as you did. But the thing that consistently is striking to me about watching, like, looking at the Chainsmokers is, like, you look at Justin Bieber. Like, you may think Justin Bieber's being lazy, but he has worked hard to be this lazy.
Yeah.
And any other mainstream pop star works incredibly hard. The thing that is abundantly clear is that the Chainsmokers do not work hard. Did anybody go to like the first One Direction tour in New York, that when it came to New York? Okay.
Only you, John.
That's, you're welcome. Yeah. So the thing, like, One Direction obviously was super famous even by that point, but on stage you could tell they just didn't care. Like, you know, they didn't commit to any choreography. They just sort of like almost like eye rolled their way through the thing. Even that was more committed than watching any Chainsmokers performance. And I think what's funny is whether it's strategic redemption or whether it's the long con of EDM actually being pop, being like a light EDM pop thing, whatever it is, being an actual pop star is legitimately hard work. And these seem like guys who are allergic to same.
That is what I found offensive about the SNL performance.
Tell him why you're mad, Garrett.
I was mad because I recapped American Idol for 10 years. And I've thought that,
relate.
Like, yes, you completely understand. You know, those first round Idol auditions, the people were more committed and had more stage presence and just like the idea of presentation on a stage than they had. And they knew they were on national television for millions of people. It's offensive, I think, in this era to put so little effort in.
Yeah. Can I just briefly shout out a favorite American Idol audition that doesn't get any love while we're here? Do you remember Jenry Benarajo?
Describe.
I think
quickly.
He did like a Gerald Levert song.
Oh, okay.
It's fire. Anyway, go look that up.
But, you know, to bring it full circle with the Postal Service, I saw the Postal Service live during their reunion tour. And a big question that was like on everybody's minds when they reunited to perform live was like, what is this going to be? And it was kind of funny because, you know, they did a big stage show and they had all these lights and, you know, you have Ben Gibbard up there who's like notoriously kind of like, you know, performatively shy and he's acting like a rock star. He's jumping around and dancing and, you know, seeing the Chainsmokers and SNL, I immediately thought back to that performance because I was like, wow, like, you know, it's not impossible to do this kind of thing mm-hmm. and look like you're enjoying it.
It's very unclear who they're sort of – where they want to fit. And maybe that's why this record is so bad because they don't know where they want to fit. I mean, you think about, you know, the biggest and most exciting – DJ in EDM is Steve Aoki, and I don't particularly like his music, but when you watch him...
BFF of Dan Bilzerian, Steve Aoki?
Who's Dan Bilzerian?
Oh, wow.
We'll take it
that's
offline.
That's another podcast.
Okay. you know, I don't like his music, but I think watching him, it's so exciting because he jumps around, he stage drives, he has all this... He has a really strong work ethic, even, you know... Major Lazer, Skrillex also yeah. put some effort into it. All these people. And then pop stars obviously have to at least like maybe the Chainsmokers should get like some backup dancers.
I actually think I know the answer to the question.
What is
I that? Have the information you seek. They want to be Coldplay.
Oh, Coldplay is so good at live though. I mean like the no, Coldplay is a good live band. I
will not.
Yes.
But also they were not always. I think they grew into right. whatever the version that we think is good now, which I don't think is good, but is generally perceived as good. This is a maturation, I think, of was not always
this
way.
I have seen Coldplay a lot, but I will say, the thing that struck me about the Coldplay Chainsmokers song is that it sounds exactly like a Coldplay song. Like I can't even hear the Chainsmokers song.
But that is also like Larry. What is the thing that you talked about where you see it both ways?
Oh, like the Magic Eye.
Yes, yeah. It looks exact. Sounds exactly like a Coldplay song. You look at it from another angle, it sounds exactly like a Chainsmokers.
That's
record.
True.
And so
that's a magical record,
right? And so, and I think that they deserve each other's middle brownness.
Do you want to listen to it?
No, but we will. This is Something Just Like This by the co-credited Chainsmokers and Coldplay. Thank you for contending with this week's edition of Popcast on the Chainsmokers. I want to thank my guests, Karen Gans, Larry Fitzmaurice, Julianne Escobedo, Shepherd. You can listen to every Popcast ever at nytimes.com/popcast. You can email us all the horrible things that Chainsmoker songs make you want to do at popcast@nytimes.com. You can subscribe to the podcast at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you get your audio content. Our producer is Pedro Rosado, and we will be back next week.